Oh, it's not good.
Yesterday, and then, oh, you did something to it just now.
You okay?
Yeah. I'll see if this is so today I'll talk about topological quantum memory. And so I first will say, you know, when it's useful, why we're looking at it.
Is your mic on?
So, why are we looking at topological quantum memory? So I guess everyone knows that we're trying to build a quantum computer. And in a quantum computer, there would, the simplest operation you can do is just to store qubits, like performing the identity operation. And to store quantum information for an arbitrary long time, something that we want to achieve, for example, to do, say, before we can do arbitrary long computations. Quantum physics is kind of, when you have a quantum state, it tends to interact with the environment, and so there will be coherence and errors occurring on it. So we need something, quantum error correction, to help
fix the problem if the state is not intrinsically stable. The one approach that we can take is the topological approach. So it has certain advantages, and it's kind of a new area, and it seems promising, so today we'll talk about it. We will start by talking about the state space of quantum memory. So what do we deal with in a quantum computer? So in classical computers, you have zero and ones, like a string. A string like this. Say you have n bits. And in quantum computer, we try to, instead of this thing either being zero or one, we have we can choose something also with two distinct states. Like, you can be in two states, but then the smallest Hilbert space, like if it's a quantum system, then there's a Hilbert space associated with it. And the space smallest you can find is a two-dimensional Hilbert space, which we didn't know well. Okay, as H2. So each of these place, in place of 0, 1, we have a qubit, which can like written as, say, alpha 0 plus beta 1, choose any some two-level system. And that's our qubit, and two orthogonal states as our basis. We can always find a basis inside H1 that's orthogonal. But also partially with quantum mechanics, we have tensor products instead of in this case, a direct product. But so we have n of them tensored together. That's kind of our state space. In the quantum computer, and evolution of so now we have if we they are perfect, then we can just perform perfect unitary on them and try to say all those quantum algorithms would work. However, or just even storing them the identity, if you want identity to act on it, it would be perfect. However, there's always noise. What we want for quantum memory is have identity acting on this. However, we usually have n, which is a noise. Like, say, we can view it as a noisy quantum channel, just some kind of general. Well, we can look at it as a being our quantum computer as a subsystem of some bigger system where unitary happens on the bigger system, and that's kind of how we define, say, our quantum channel noisy because we only have partial knowledge. And so that's the kind of thing we are dealing with. For example, quantum channels? It can be written as, well, at least the useful thing, I guess, for an analysis of quantum error. Well, maybe I should. Oh, never mind. Okay, so let me do some quantum error correction. Just say what it is. And quantum error correction, we have the system, and then we attach. So, like, we try to correct things by not redundancy, but just some kind of redundancy, putting something else on it, and measuring the part that's not or was not originally in the system, and to get some information about the system. I mean, what happened to the system, but not and the, what happened to the state that was encoded, without actually learning anything about the state. So in doing so, we want to see what kind of errors we need to deal with. So a general noise channel can be, there's a theorem that says it takes, have I introduced density matrix yet? You all know by now, right. It can be written as the sum of some kind of general operator. This acts on, and where we have memory, there are n qubits in the system. So we define this as each n. They can be written as this, and the condition on EIs are quite general. One thing is that they have to sum up to identity when written like this. That might be it. Sorry? Does it matter? So first there are two things. One thing is that if we can correct, we define a a quantum error correction procedure can be viewed as another quantum channel that just takes density matrix to density matrix, and basically that's the definition. When it's composed with n, so first the noise occurs on the state, and then we perform some kind of recovery where correlation can exist in between these things. We want to get the state rollback. That's when the recovery operation can recover roll. And so I'm so disorganized. So as I said earlier, usually the computational space is consisting of, I'm really disorganized. So earlier we were saying about quantum error correction, and we tried to encode n k qubits inside k qubits. N k qubits and n qubits. So that we do that by choosing a k-dimensional, 2 to the k-dimensional subspace in this 2 to the n-dimensional qubit space. So this being 2 to the n-dimensional, in the superspace of n, and this is a vector space isomorphic to H of k. So we call for a given code, if there's such an operation exists, then we call this, so we call this a successful recovery. And then we can look at, if recovery is successful, we want the recovery to be successful for any arbitrary state role, but we can show that it is successful if it works on all the pure states, just by linearity of this operator. And then another thing that people is useful to know is that if it works also by linearity of this operator, if we correct or in the sense of being relaxing the condition to being proportional, then it could correct these ones and it corrects this kind of thing. For each term, then it corrects the sum. And another thing slightly, I guess, more involved to show is that it corrects this thing, say U1 and U2, well, separately, U1 and E2, then it also corrects any linear combination of them, and that takes a bit of, I mean, not as easy to show, but it's true. So all we need to do is to find some basis of the operators on HN. Well, not find. If we prove for a basis of operators on HN, then we can say that you can correct all the N errors, like, well, pretty general class of noise channels. And so a common thing to do. Well, maybe. So now let's go to the toric code. Word to say is that because we know the poly operators on the Hilbert space and qubits is a basis for all the linear operators on HN, then it's kind of conventional to look at them and say determine whether we can correct them. Now toric code is an example of a quantum error correction code. Correcting code, and well, so we would just state it. So what is the? We want to first define. Want to know what it like. We need to have a state inside some kind of, choose some kind of coding space inside some bigger Hilbert space. So, if we arrange. So now this, I'm just giving the specifying. Well. So if we have n square qubits, two L square qubits, and we arrange them on the lattice, then we can define the code space T to be the simultaneous eigenspace of a set of commuting. One horizontal and vertical. Right. Yeah, they're on the line. Yes, you arrange the qubits on the lines. and so I was saying, let's define T. Well, we want it to be the simultaneous eigenspace of this set of operators, which are this called at each side, we've defined XS, which is X acting on. We have X acting on these ones. And also at the same time, let's define the operators first. And then I have Z acting on these. So we want to be able to be this, well, for this set of commuting variables, commuting observables, so all of them, so X, S, and Z of P, so because it's associated to Plaquet, this is associated to a site. So we know that the dimension of this subspace, we can calculate the dimension of the subspace. So first they are commuting, so there is an eigenspace kind of, well, they're there are eigenvectors which are stabilized, but okay, anyway. So, yeah, sure. A tensor product.
Okay.
Tensor product. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
Yep, it's something easy to show. So, yeah, sure. I can, yeah. No, it's very simple. So if you have, well, not, well, it's very easy to explain, I mean. So all the X is type commute, right? Uh-huh. All the Z-type commutes.
Well,
that's still okay, because like X, if XX equals XX, okay. So, the same type commute, the only thing we need to worry about is this type and this type. And if they're separated, then they add on different qubits and they commute. If they're close together, then it's either here or they share an even number of edges, so they commute. So, the minus one, say, even if they don't commute, like each X and Z doesn't commute on this edge, you get a minus one, and you get another minus one on another edge. So if the commutivity relation is to the number of edges they share, common edges. And if it's even, then you get one. Well, you get no, you think that you end up showing that they commute. Mm-hmm. Right, and the minus comes out twice. Uh-huh. Okay. So once well, we define this, and we want to say calculate how what's the dimension of this thing. So let's use something from the stabilizer codes. Well, just so that it's easier to calculate. I guess we could calculate, but I want to just state it. Well, okay. So the number of qubits in code, or the dimension, to the log 2 dimension of the qubit space, is given by n minus r, where n is the number of physical qubits, and R is the number of independent stabilizer generators, so or the number of commuting variables that's in here. And well, it's particularly easy to show when these variables are chosen from the poly group, or you know, kind of some poly operator plus minus one. I mean, with phases plus or minus well, or yeah, sure. So if we face plus minus one, a bunch of things, and they satisfy. And it is, well, okay. Well, just particularly, sorry. K equals, yeah, sure, ask questions.
I'm not sure if you said this already. You might have an idea.
Uh-huh.
So the stable vector, what is the G? Or you haven't mentioned that yet. How are they used?
Okay, so, you mean in terms of error correction or in terms of defining the space?
In terms of error correction. If you didn't mention
that. Yeah, I was trying to.
Okay, if you didn't mention that, it's okay. I just thought you might have it.
Right, I guess I haven't really formally introduced it. I just used this word just slipped in. But, I mean, I was trying to do it maybe without, but this. Have you heard about it before? Oh, okay. Okay, so I was trying to avoid it, I guess. I don't know how long I can avoid it for. I guess maybe for a while. So this formula holds. This is number of, this is a k in the 2 to the k dimension, this dimensions. And this is the R in the number of independent things in there. So, and then we can see that by definition, this equals to the number of edges, and this number equals the number of sites plus the number of pets. So that's number of vertices plus number of faces. And then this one, I don't know, so let's see. First, I haven't been very careful about defining this. So we have a lattice, but I haven't told you what are the boundary conditions. So I choose the periodic boundary condition and identify this point with this point, and you know, this is, there's no qubits, kind of. There's the same as this. So basically, it's living on this torus. With, say, you can cut it like, you know, one axis being along this direction, and they have names and I forgot them. The other one along here, and just cut them out times in each way, and then we have this. And on such a surface, so this is tessellation of the torus. we have, so this is, you know, I guess, some kind of complex structure on this, then with the surface, so this we like to call keep. There's some invariance about this surface. So no matter how we draw edges and tessellate the surface, it has to satisfy some property, which is as follows. So the number of needs to add 2 because they're not all independent, or minus 2 inside. So we have these operators, but they're not all independent. So the number of independent generators, this minus 2, because if you apply all the flickets, then the product is identity, because you apply, say, at Z to each edge twice, so you get the identity. And same for the X's. So you need to take away 2 from this formula. And so what you get is you have the number of edges minus the number of vertices plus the number of faces, and plus 2 overall. So that gives you the Euler characteristic of the torus plus 2. That's just kind of by definition. So that's where we will eventually get to, I guess. But it's pretty simple, I guess. Well, might as well talk about it now. Mm-hmm. So this holds in general, and pyrogenesis is still the definition of N and R. They also both satisfy this relationship because it's a closed surface, and so orientable closed surfaces. Well, let's say for now I will just restrict it to the kind of closed orientable surface where the genus. No, they don't have to be. They don't have to be. They can have punctures in general. But so just to make it an easy extension, it will. Let's just talk about toruses with G holes. Okay, and if we have these ones, then the Euler characteristic is 2 minus G. So we can see that the two just cancel out. So in general, the number of thing that this kind of thing can encode is equal to G from number arguments of dimensions. And which can also be reached from the analysis of can be announced from the analysis of the logical operations on this whole space. So what it actually does to the qubits, you can analyze from there. But this derivation from chi equals 2 minus g, I think it already incorporates the topological part of it in there. 2 minus 2. Okay, so. No, it includes 1 qubit. K is 1. So let me see where it. For orientable surfaces. Okay, I also forget a minus sign too. Yeah, so one is, I can remember, so one is, I think for non-orientable is that, or, but I didn't write. I couldn't, well, I was looking at a formula, I couldn't tell which is which. Okay. Oh yeah, then let me just correct this as well then. Right. So now, what can we do about it? So now that we defined it and we know the coding space, well, there's this subspace, and how do we actually correct errors? So I guess still, so from here, we want to say use the, for our analysis, we want to look at the correctable set of errors from within the poly errors. Doesn't move. So let's define. Well, is it, everyone knows what poly operators are? No? Okay. But I'm too lazy to write down the x one. Yeah, and then poly group is just the tensor product of things, including i's. I mean, impossibly taking identity on each qubit. So, you know, yeah, pure tensor. And so let's define that to be the set F. Just for now. Define to be the F, set F without the faces, everything is just the tensor product. And they form bases for, well, as we were talking about, they form bases for, HN, I mean the linear operators on HN, and now, so we are interested in what subsets of F corrects, can be corrected using that code, and correctability is defined as recovery operation exists to bring it back to the space. So even if we can't find it, we can still, people come up with necessary sufficient condition for the correctability of errors. Errors are just strictly linear operators instead of the general noise channel. And even if we don't know what recovery procedure we need to use, we can still say whether this can be in principle corrected. And well, and it will definitely be corrected if satisfied set of condition. So let's, and this question is actually very, very well answered, I guess, by using the stabilizer formalism, and which I still trying to avoid here. All right. That's basic. Okay. So now, what subsets can do and can be corrected? I guess I'm not avoiding very well. Let's call it something. Whatever. I guess we can look at it by, I guess I'm not avoiding it now. So first look at, we define the things. So we define the, so let's use this formalism, which I will talk about now. What time is it? Okay, sure. Okay. We'll just follow the conventional approach now. So let's define the poly group to be the thing generated by F. And well, this code, particular code, can be viewed as this. Well, okay, I haven't finished. Let me define it then. Okay, so let a subgroup of PN. Well, it's a stabilizer. Well, maybe I should do it the physically motivated way, which is that if there's a non-trivial subspace of this n, like to the Hilbert space on n qubits, that's stabilized by it, or in the sense that so it take n phi equals phi for all m in S, and we can see that naturally this forms a group, because if you apply another thing in S, it's still y will cost, well, just gives you the fact the same state. Say nm is, then it's still in the stabilizer, any product still there. So we know, in general, if we define things like this, it will form a group. And in particular, define things like this, right? But in particular, we want to look at states and subspaces that are stabilized by subgroups of Pn. It's just kind of a little bit of a restriction, so the core space is not general, but not any subspace can be described this way, but if we say we take this kind of subspace, then it's called a stabilizer code. And here, so if we define it this way, then S has to satisfy certain conditions, and then S, and S, I guess, if and only if, it's a stabilizer, if and only if it's a billion subgroup of PN, and this is already by setup. Okay, and what else? Minus one is not in S, and so basically the fact that it's commuting and minus one just ruling out things like having I's and stuff, because the Pauli operators, their eigenvalues are only plus minus one, as we might, well, simple, no, no. So they have eigenvalues plus minus ones, and if I is in front of it, then we can never find a state that, so, you know, already for that particular operator, there's no state that satisfies that. And the state, like this space, T cross. So the set of all such phi form the coding space T, right? So the T will be like already zero. And you know, some arguments that, so that's just sufficient and necessary. So now we define this, and we look at, so anything from S does nothing to the state, to the physical state, hence also the logical state. Does anyone? First, people have questions about logical state? Sometimes I get questions like that. Was it making sense to you? Oh, okay, maybe I should just say it. Yeah, say something, yeah. So if we have, so here the isomorphism gives us the logical state. So this is 2 to the k-dimensional, and this is also 2 to k-dimensional, and we find a, say, map between the orthonormal bases, and then so we can just represent things in here by things here with a bar on top, just notational noise. What else? So now, right. The real inside cheat, yeah. What is correctable? Okay. And let's define some, well, let's see what's, well, not correctable first. Or at least some things that are not correctable. So this forms a group. Then we want to see what, well, okay, if we define the normalizer as the group that normalizer of S is the, well, inside PN, so elements of PN such that, okay, the subgroup of subgroup PN, which in which S is normal, a normal subgroup. So the set of all elements. How do I write it? P in PN such that P Q P. Well, the same inverse is same. Equals Q. For all Q in S. So that's the definition. P is minus 1 is equal to, because it's in a poly group, so all X and Y is, yeah, so that's just some, yeah, I mean, I can write it there anyways, because it's more like, usually normalizers that we find that way. And so that's all the things that commute with S. So if we look at elements inside N, so we know that things are, if it's not in the stabilizer and it's in the normalizer, then we know it's not correctable. Because first of all, the air, okay, another thing to say. So how we do air correction is by measuring everything in the stabilizer. So by measuring those, we are, if it were in the code space, if it was certain vectors in this code space, let's talk about pure state, because we said that if we correct our pure state, then we can do mixed state. If it's inside a code space, then measuring S won't change anything, because whether you get plus or minus, you always get plus 1 first of all, because it's plus 1 my eigenstates of all those things in the stabilizer, and the state is just back, like projected. Well, okay, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You all know, I think. Okay. So, So measuring those syndromes, measuring things inside N of S doesn't change state. We'll give you one measuring. They will give you plus ones if the thing is right. So those are called like syndromes that we say we cannot detect any errors. But if any of them becomes negative one, then we say that it's, then we notice there's some error happening there. But now I think I need the upper board. So if you have, yeah, but I need one to left. Okay, maybe I can do imaginarily, do without. So if, or maybe it's better to have it.
One.
Yeah, just the one that I already drew on. Okay. So in here, if we have an, thank you. Well, see, we can. So we, since we're talking about air chains, so let's say, for example, pick an X air, orange color. When we measure, oh, not X, sorry. Oh yeah, but it doesn't matter. I'll pick this one. Pick an orange air, well, X air, then it's not going to commute with the Z piece, this one, and commutes with all other stabilizers, right? Because X commutes with X as usual, and these two get partial. So we'll have two, we get two minus ones when we measure the syndrome. And so all the Z, measuring all the Z piece detects everything, the endpoints of any, the endpoint, well, okay. Let me draw the other one. Okay. So if we have an X error this way, then these two will be problematic, or we know it. And if we have a Z error, then these two will be will have syndrome minus one. And that way, so and it's easier to see from here because on this kind of thing, it shows the any error chain of the X type, Z type, it will show up. Because we cannot see the errors, right, in when we actually do the thing. We only see the endpoints, so they identify the endpoints of an error chain of the Z type. Okay. And similarly, if you look at the dual lattice, by connecting this way and this way, then, well, imagine this qubit arranged in the other orientation, then also kind of the same picture arises. Not too high. Okay, so if things commute with our stabilizer, then we cannot detect it. As I said, the syndrome will be normal and we do nothing about it. We assume it was right, at least in the recovery. Otherwise, how? Because we are doing the recovery only based on the syndrome, and so we won't know anything. And then if it's inside S, then, well, first, not first, another, well, first, S is a normal subgroup of N, just to be explicit. Because that's kind of by net definition of N that is the normal subgroup of N. Anything inside S is commute with itself. And now we're looking at errors in here. And if it's inside S, then it's not like it's the identity operation on the physical state. If it's not, then if it's an N without S, then it gives you something that we cannot correct. That we know for sure, but that probably other ones. Right. But even when we have abnormal syndromes, it doesn't mean that we always correct things properly. So there are things outside of, I mean, of course. We're interested in the set of correctable errors. And correctable errors are, well, I'm not sure how to see. Oh yeah. Okay. So what's one thing that one candidate that we cannot correct? Okay, let me start from something simple. If we have that go around the torus, like a wrap around one of the things, then we cannot identify. Well, it will be in N because it has no endpoint. Along one of those things, say over around there, and then it has no endpoint. However, it's not. However, it's not in S because it's not the boundary of a surface, of a two cell. And whereas if you have a little like homologically trivial patch or like chain on just lying on the surface instead of going around one of those holes, then it is in the stabilizer because, for example, say we're talking about Z, then we can take a bunch of them and multiply them as one some kind of boundary. So anything that's in the boundary can be kind of generated by the kind of the black S, for example, let's talk about just Z S, and so it's in the stabilizer. But whenever it wraps around one hole, it cannot be generated by those things. So it's not in the stabilizer, but it's in the normalizer. So those are some examples of. Some examples of not correctable errors, and anything that Right. But we're But let's see how we can do. I'm not finished about this point, but I haven't decided what to say next about this particular thing. But let's consider something else. Okay. Well, let's consider. So we have a set of, actually, it's, you can write down the subset of correctable errors. But the question is, in general, they kind of, these things happen. I mean, we don't really have control of them. We cannot make them nice and say every operator in here or something like that are some k local. So you have to define the distance of code as the minimum thing weight of the things. Well, the number of qubits where it acts on non-trivially. And what we cannot, noise channels kind of don't behave that way. Well, or well, okay. For example, some reasonable ones to consider are such as this one. Okay, and a reasonable noise channel. Well, not that reasonable, but restrictive, but it's still more reasonable than requiring everything just act on k qubits and nothing more and nothing. Well, yeah, nothing more than that. So one thing we can write down is of this form. So that corresponds to, let me see if I have to, yeah, right. So it corresponds to flipping out, let's act on individual qubits, and we can take the tensor products of these noise channels. So let's tensor them on odd n qubits. Okay, and the I qubit, on each qubit, there's a constant probability of flipping bits, and there's constant probability of flipping z, and there's no correlation. Well, and well, we pick x and z. What in we pick x and z? They're particularly simple here because this stabilizer contains the stabilized elements of the form just x or just z, and so. If we do this, then the x and z errors are uncorrelated, and we can deal with this the set of correct x chains and z chain independently, and we don't need to worry about correlations between them. And so, for example, if we have on this lattice, we have main lattice implied. We have a bunch of in the case of toroid code, it can only have an even number of endpoints showing up because it has to, there has nowhere to end. It's like a closed surface. So having an error chain on this torus will necessarily give you a 2-point. Like, well, if our syndrome measurements are perfect, which we were assuming. Otherwise, this correctability thing might not, like, well, it's more complicated or not. We assume our recovery can be like performed with perfect device so far. And if we have an odd number of them, then we can say because they indicate if you have an error, let's denote the actual error chain, they satisfy the relation that the boundary of the actual error chain of the Z type equals the syndrome of the X type, okay, that we establish. Similarly, the error chain of X equals the syndrome of Z type, okay. And by syndrome, I guess I can say plus 0 and 1, and so the ones are the formal linear combination of this 0 things, 0 chain. And we have this, so what we need to do now is to say what is a reasonable way to do recovery. So what's the most likely error chain, I guess, if we do? Boundary of which? Oh, I see. Boundary, okay, yes. So to get this one is a straightforward one, and this one you need to draw the lattice like with where the horizontal things become vertical, because this is a representation, right? Yeah, we go to do. Okay, if you are familiar with that, then yes. Here. Okay, so what's the most probable error chain given, say, a set of big N nodes? And we want to minimize. So in a case that all the probability of P things, so let's pick a particular chain and ask what's the probability of having this particular chain. So it is probability of this red thing equals the length of the chain. Let's say length, well, I don't know how to write length of P. Length of this chain. The number of links. Okay, so P to the number of links, which is when error happens, so there's probability of error happening, and then 1 minus P of having no errors, which is total number of there are so many qubits without any error, so it's from this channel, this is the probability. And we also have, for any chain of length L, we have, well, no, that's not true. We say a particular chain, the probability is given by this. And the most, then I write, this can be written as P over 1 minus P to L minus, multiplied by this overall factor of 1 minus P. And so whether a chain has error is proportional to the probability of this thing raised to the number of errors. And so the longer the chain is, the less likely it's going to have error. So we want to choose the shortest chain whose boundary are given by these things. And shortest chain includes two chains of two things. So we find this by using some classical algorithm. So if we're doing a simulation, then I use the classical algorithm and find this thing, and or even in quantum memory, we assume that we have classical computation and they are very efficient. Well, they are pretty fast, especially these kind of polynomial time algorithms. So we assume them to be can be executed almost instantaneously, very rapidly. Otherwise, this thing won't hold because every time we perform recovery, we need to calculate, obtain some classical syndrome and do some computation with them and decide what to do, what quantum operation to do on the system. So I guess we kind of need this kind of polynomial algorithm. And so we do the same thing with that. I guess I haven't said much. And then my time is up. Pretty fast. Well, in the case when it can be corrected, for example, we could be too, very easily wrong if this extends more than half of the lattice size, right? I mean, or if in the particular case, but it would definitely be wrong. Right, if they're close and Yeah, depends on the P. But high P, well, I guess are we saying that we can cope with higher p than expected, kind of maybe there's something from simulations of some other like theory about a type that we can do a bit better than we expected. We want to find what p we can handle, so that's the problem. That's the question. Okay, well, so let me, I guess, stop here. But could you have questions? I think I am. Thanks for the patience.
Are you using the long chains like along the two circles to code something?
Or? We could certainly code that. So you see there are two qubits. So one of the things that I've been looking at, I guess, was you can, for example, encode a logical without error in there. You can identify. So in addition to these set of stabilizer generators, in that way, we can put in some two extra ones. You know, if we want to encode a particular state, then we'll put in two extra ones. So if it were, because in this space, right, when we have stabilizer, we can, we can at least encode, we can at least encode the pop, you know, some kind of, something in the you know, stabilizer poly.
So I think my question is, what is the map from that the logic state to the torus state? Do you know what that map is? Is it too long?
It's pretty.
It's long to write out. Is it simple to write out?
Okay. It's in this case. Okay.
In the case of just a simple torus. Yeah.
Okay. So these one half say zero and ones, and the zero are generally we say the they are the plus one eigenstate of Z, right? And this case, let's be the logical Z in here, and let it be in addition, it's stabilized by the logical Z operation, and the logical Z operation we can like in one way of encoding, we can just let it be the Z of
logical
Z, this thing that stretches along the thing.
Okay, so a circle of logical Z up like that would be.
Right. It encodes two qubits, right? So if you want to specify a state, you need another one, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's 0, 0, then we do stabilize by this and also that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we if it's 0, 1, then we do. If it's 0, 1, then we do this and stabilize the negative of that. Or even one of them. So and then you can do all this.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. So before everyone leaves, there's just a couple things that I want to say. The first thing is